The Blue Bomber Podcast.
That is, wow, that's fantastic. I like that.
Make sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or at cjob.com.
Je m'appelle Greg. He is Derek Taylor, the voice of your Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This is not bad, eh? DT, a little culture to the Blue Bomber podcast. Well, you know what? I just used up basically 4% of all my French words. So we should probably not try and go down that route. And, well, how would you even say that en français? You know what? Does not matter. DT, I had contemplated just going to Kyle Milroy, who so capably puts this podcast together on the technical side every week, and go, you know what, Kyle, why don't you just post the sounds of the game from Saturday? Because they pretty much speak for themselves. 51-6, an absolutely dominating performance. We can talk all we want about six touchdowns and six possessions in the first half. But how about that defense, DT? 17 quarters of football, and they've only allowed a touchdown in one of them.
Right. It's impressive. And to think that, oh, by the way, that also resides along the league's best offense. That's why I said in the post-game show that if every team is playing at their 100% best game, Winnipeg wins the Grey Cup. Like Toronto, excellent, excellent, excellent. And obviously the reigning Grey Cup champions, BC, excellent football team. But I think playing at their top level, Winnipeg wins the Grey Cup. Now, will you be playing at your top level in the playoffs becomes a whole other thing. But we just saw it in this one. The stat we dropped during the broadcast, five highest scoring games in the CFL this season. Single team scoring games this season are all Bombers. And then, oh, by the way, Montreal can't get any touchdowns against them. Saskatchewan, no touchdowns for you. It's BC. Remember when you beat us back in week three? Take this, and they put 50 on them. Like, they just have defense, offense, kicker, punter. Punter's pretty good. Kicker's fantastic. The Bombers have everything. But man, yeah, that fully constituted defense. I've been kind of everywhere in this little ramble here. That fully constituted defense, when they're not taking unnecessary risks, man, fantastic.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and just kind of rounding into form now. And a couple players I'm going to ask you about in a moment here. I also want to approach the notion that the rest of the Canadian Football League wants to phone either the Saskatchewan Roughriders head office or maybe, you know, direct to Pete Robertson and go, what the hell did you just do? Have you, like, awoken? Not that they were sleeping, but they might have been maybe cruising through this regular season with the idea of peaking in later October, early November. Like, now all of a sudden, I think you have a Winnipeg, and you're around them far more often than I am. But I just got the sense when we were talking in the pregame show on Saturday, said, I just get the sense that the Blue Bombers are angry, they're perturbed, and they feel like they have something to prove. And boy, did they do that. Is there any truth to any of the words that just came out of my mouth, except for the last thing, which is perfectly obvious when the score is 51-6?
Most times I don't really buy into stuff like that. I just feel like games are random collections of events and plays. But when you think back to what practice looked like on Wednesday of this past week, Kenny Lawler was furious with Winston Rowe, screaming across the field, 50 yards, just yelling at everybody, mad at the world. Very next play after Kenny and Winston Rowe's, Winston kind of calms it down. Winston was never particularly aggressive in that, but Kenny was yelling. Next play, Nick Dembski up the seam, catch the pass, gets up and just hammer spikes the ball into the ground. Like, whoa, there's some frustration from Nick. Then he grabs it and trots back to the huddle. You go, ooh, something's up here. This is just different. The drills they were doing from the coaches, like, some of this is kind of back to CFL basics, not like, you know, up downs that you and I would have done in high school, but like kind of back to CFL basics. And you go, this is a different practice than we normally see. And this is a different temperament than we normally see. My interpretation of that was, oh, they are not happy with overtime loss to Saskatchewan. I didn't know what it would portend, right? Like 6-6 and 51 points. And oh, by the way, you only get six. But this was just a different week. So most times I don't buy that. But this week there was something else, I think, in the guys that that led to this. I don't know if you could have predicted it. I told my friends to bet the Jake Dolagala unders, but that was next level.
The way the team came out, and I tip my hat to Buck Pierce and to Richie Hall as often as I can, because this team and their coordinators are on a par and on a level that you seldom see in an organization. You might see it for 1 year, you might see it for two, but Buck Pierce has just come in and taken Paul LaPolice's vision for this Blue Bomber offense and put it on high octane and done something extra special. And Richie Hall just seems to play whatever cards are dealt. But I absolutely loved the way the Blue Bombers started that game. They established the run with Brady Oliveira. They threw the ball to Brady out of the backfield. There were no home run throws until later on in the game. They just went out and did their business, went about their business in a way that just spoke so eloquently to me that this team was just out like it was a business trip Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, the first, I remember looking at it, and it didn't come into the conversation Doug and I were having during the game, but there was a point where Brady had five carries and Zach had five throws, and obviously Zach had a scramble, but Zach had five or six dropbacks, they had five or six running back carries, and the yards were pretty even on those, and you go, oh, okay, people will like this, that they've got both going, because sometimes it's only one of them, right? Sometimes the run game isn't going. Sometimes the pass game isn't going. The West Final last year, the pass game was not going. Brady puts the team on his back. Other times it's been the reverse of Zach just firing missiles all over the place and they don't need anything else. This one, it was a little bit of everything, and Saskatchewan tried to stop something and they just could not. And then when they needed it, okay, well, Dalton Schoen's ripping down the field, and there goes late in the half. They run like, oh, let's run the ball with Brady and kill some clock, and then we'll see what we do on second down. And second down was deep to Lawler down the rail on the left-hand side as he runs past Nick Marshall, and you go, oh, okay, well, that's going to be good because they're on like the 8-yard line now. This is just everything. Quarterback sneak game was working. Dalton Schoen got a jet sweep among all the guys who got jet sweeps this season. They got Dalton one finally. Man, one thing, remember what we're in week 14, so approaching week 15. Remember about week 4 where you and I were on here going, what is wrong with this offensive line? Is everybody old now? We have not done that in a long time.
No,
that offensive line is killing it right now.
Yeah, they really are. And so that brings me to back to Brady and that Zach Collaros run, that 11-yard run, by the way, was a statement in my mind within itself from Zach.
Interesting.
It's something that...
Why? So? How so?
We just don't see him do that very often. Even when there is an opportunity for him to run, he will be looking pass till the last possible second. And doesn't really, I just felt as though he really wanted that. And to run for a first down and to jump up the way he did, and then Saskatchewan player tries to jump over him, hits him in the head, of course, as he's jumping over him by accident, certainly not purposeful. I just felt a purpose, an exclamation mark at the end of that run, like I do just about every single time Brady carries the ball. 1,144 yards rushing in 13 games. He's just added 368 yards receiving. And this is just a guy I feel is just now coming into his own. And the conversation was started to a great extent on the TSN broadcast on Saturday. I was watching the game on Sunday morning, because how could you not watch that back as many times as you possibly could? And I think it was Glenn Suter. And then at halftime, you know, Milt Stegall's having this discussion. I brought it up with Bob Irving yesterday morning. Ted Wyman in the Winnipeg Sun is now Brady Oliveira in the conversation? In the conversation, nobody's saying that he's the leading candidate, but does he not deserve to be in the conversation for most outstanding player in the Canadian Football League thus far in 2023?
Do you want me to talk generally about it? Do you want my opinion on it?
Well, I want your take on it. What do you think?
I don't think so. Brady's awesome, but this is still the Canadian Football League, the Canadian Throwing League. And Zach Kolaris, I put this stat on Twitter, and folks, if you would, follow me at DT on OB. Zach Kolaris, last season when he was the most outstanding player, 37 touchdowns and 13 interceptions and 9.6 yards per attempt. This season, over 13 games, his pace is 37 touchdowns, so same number as last year when we were like, oh my God, this guy's unbelievable. 14 interceptions, so one more than last year, and 10.6 yards per attempt, which is a full yard more than last year. And in a league where the average, basically 2 yards per attempt over the league average, which is an unbelievable number.
20%. It's actually, it's almost close to 25% more than the league average.
Yeah, exactly. And last year, remember how great Nathan Rourke was last year? Zach's exceeding him in all these categories from last season, from what Rourke was on pace for. Rourke had 10.2 yards per attempt. Zach in this offense is 10.6. So Kolaris is better than last year. And people tire of voting for guys 3 years in a row, right? The NBA this season was, well, we can't have Nikola Jokic as the MVP because he's not Larry Bird, and Larry Bird was the last guy to win 3 MVPs. And I look at that and go, I don't care what happened last year and the year before. What's happening this year? Zach's numbers are incredible. His team is 10-3, and he's the driving force behind it. Obviously, they're incredibly talented, and other quarterbacks in this spot. If Vernon Adams was the quarterback of the Bombers, we may be having the Vernon Adams conversation. I'm trying to think if I get a vote for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers one, or if the team nominates it, and then I get to vote after that. Anyway, I would be on Zach Kolaris. And then one of the parts I went back because of this conversation, I went back and went, okay, well, who were the running back MOPs in the last however long? The last one was John Cornish. And when you say John Cornish to a CFL fan, oh yeah. John Cornish, the year he was MOP, was over 1,800 yards rushing,
yep.
7 yards per attempt. Oh, okay, that's really good. Before that, it was the year Mike Pringle was over 2,000 yards. So I think those, to me, are accurate examples of what you have to be at the running back position to be the most outstanding player, to be more valuable than a quarterback, because it's still football in my mind. So Brady's on pace for 15 and some, 16 and some. He's added in some receiving as well, but it's still a quarterback league. And when you have a quarterback on your team who is just the straw that stirs the drink, it's all about who gets the nomination. But for me at this moment, after, you know, game 13, it's for me, Zach Kolaris would be the MOP of this team. Brady Oliveira, I don't know who's in the race with him for most outstanding Canadian in the league. Matthew Betts, who leads the league in sacks, I believe still, but to me, it's Zach for all those reasons.
I'd have a hard time saying you didn't convince me, especially when you throw in the fact that Zach missed the better part of a full game against Edmonton. And mm-hmm. then with 3 minutes left on Labor Day, I think he had 5 yards passing in the first half, the first 27 minutes. So he almost missed another half of football there, theoretically.
Yeah.
And so when those numbers start adding up, I just, you know, and you and I are could be president and co-president of the Nick Dembski fan club. And so typically you and mm-hmm. I need to be talked out of voting for Nick Dembski, best Canadian, and associated to a variety of different things, whether it's the club or around the league. But it's just, you know, Brady's just, I think Brady deserves his due here, and it'll be fascinating awesome. To see what happens down the stretch here, because I think his numbers only get bigger from here in terms of, you know, yards per game. And so that extrapolation, I think that number ends up being maybe a little bit higher than that 1500 something. It might be in the 1600 range as we, you know, amazing. Head toward the colder weather. You mentioned the fact that there weren't too many concerns. That the kickoff coverage was a little bit better, but last year, if we were doing this podcast right now, we'd still be probably talking about Mark Leggio as the only obvious hole in the Blue Bomber lineup. Is there anything that's perfectly obvious right now as we sit here with the Blue Bombers at 10-3, five games left in the regular season? They're going to Hamilton Saturday. I don't know what you expect there. Then the bye week. And then the game of games for this season, at least so far, and that's Toronto coming in on the 29th. Is there a fear or a concern that the Blue Bombers look ahead not only to the 29th versus Toronto, but that bye week as well?
My fear for what keeps the Bombers from winning the Grey Cup this season, it's going to be big plays against is going to be my fear. And those, I mean, when you watch football, those sometimes happen and they sometimes don't happen, right? Absolutely did not happen in this last game, and they haven't happened against the Bombers in a while. And they're excellent at preventing the big play, but it's always there in my mind of, oh, okay, well, remember those guys were running open behind DeMario Houston? We kind of jumped on that one, and who was it, Emelis or whoever, Jones took it for 64 yards in the SAS game. Oh, they got in behind on that. Oh, boy, okay. Who was Dedrick Mills took the opening carry of the Calgary game for 33 yards. Oh, okay. Oh, boy. So I'm concerned about variance, honestly, which is, I think probably is negated a little bit by the fact that they are back to being fully healthy in this one. But the big play is just always the one that will concern me. And then we've seen random games where the offense, the first half against SAS that you mentioned, they could not produce at all in that first half. The entire game, week three against BC, they didn't do anything in that game. The offense and the defense had 30 hung on it. Oh, boy, what's happening here? Their variance is what concerns me, which I don't know that that's honestly much to be concerned about, but it's that little nagging worry, like, did I turn off the stove before I left the house, right? You're pretty sure you turned off the stove. But it just sits there in one part of your stomach going, oh, man, if I didn't turn off the stove, I'm going to burn the house down. Oh, man, if they get hit by the deep ball, they're not going to win the Grey Cup. Just it's that level of, I almost want to say nonsense because it's myself we're talking about. But that's my only concern because, frankly, it's the number one scoring offense and the number one scoring defense in the Canadian Football League. What am I concerned about? But it's, you know what I mean, G-Mac? It's just there.
No, I get you 100%. I wish I had $10 for every time Laura N. McNabb told me that she was turning around going back home to make sure she'd closed her garage, you know. On the way to work. And so I get that. I have walked back to my car after parking it at a Jets or a Bombers game. And I'm not sure I locked it. So I get exactly the analogy that you're bringing here. And so there are those nagging things. And I think the only thing that will cure that will be some recency bias as we make our way through these next five games to see if the Blue Bombers can get rid of those habits. But I think even then, when you examine the entire body of work, even if the Bombers over the next five games manage to kind of shove that problem aside, I think it'll still be in the back of your mind and in the back of yours. I've got two names
Absolutely. On
defense that I want to bring up to you. And we talk about the star players all the time. We've spoken about Zach Brady. We've got Nick's name in there. Oh yeah, Dalton Schoen had three touchdowns on Saturday. Kenny Lawler, by the way, Schoen. Just threw in, you know what, he's up to 10 now on the season. A guy who some of us have suggested is somewhat struggling this season versus last year. Like, come on, ridiculous is that?
10 weeks ago, weren't you saying sophomore slump when he was number two in the league in receiving? Wasn't it?
No, just in terms of...
Was that us? I forget.
Yeah, that was the expectation we had set from him, right? because in Sask he had a couple drops, and he's had a few drops this year, and he would admit that. His body language after those, you know, when a guy says, yeah, I know I should have had that, versus a guy who kind of says, ah, yeah, well, that was overthrown anyway. Thanks a lot, Zach. You don't ever see that from 83 or 89 or 88 or any of these players. There's such a continuity there. But, you know, the star guys, we can talk about endlessly, but I want to drop two names. First, I'm going to start with a guy who has really impressed me over the last 3 weeks in particular, Rheta Kramdy.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. I mean, this game, I asked him in the post game show about his sack, and he's like, well, the first one got taken away by, and the second one got taken away by, or the second one they gave to this guy, and the third one, okay, the third one I finally got. I'm like, oh, that's right. Yeah, Kramdy was all over the quarterbacks, and some of those aren't necessarily he's first pressure and bringing the guy down. Some of them are, you know, cleanups and pursuits and stuff like that, but he was all over one, and then, oh, man, he tracked Jamal Morrow out of the backfield, and it's one of those ones, right, when you're calling play-by-play, This might be just me. I don't hear a lot of the guys do it, but I just start laughing. Like, like he just absolutely popped Jamal Morrow. You go, whoa. Ooh, I know what the hit of the game for Vernas Autobody is. That was unbelievable. That was awesome. Like, that's such a strange kind of story of the Bombers last year decide Donald Rutledge isn't good enough at that dime defensive back spot. So they trade for Aldon Darby. They trade a pass rusher for Aldon Darby, which Bomber fans, you know, a lot of them want another pass rusher in the rotation. They trade a pass rusher for Aldon Darby. Darby starts, and then all of a sudden Darby doesn't start. Kramdy was going to replace him. Kramdy got injured, so Darby kept starting. Kramdy took over the starting spot, and then eventually Darby got knocked back to the six-game injured list because they wanted someone else on. You go, what's the story behind this that we're never going to find out about because the Bombers keep everything secret? But yeah, Kramdy is flying all over the place, and you know, it gives them, to have a Canadian in that spot gives them extra flexibility, and to have Kramdy, you know, deemed worthy of taking that spot from, you know, a coaching staff that's not fooling around and not just given, you know, randomly handing out a job because he's Canadian. It's a real testament to him. There's been some struggles,
sure,
but
in the last three games in particular, DT, he's really stood out for me, and stood out because we haven't used his name a lot in terms of, oh boy, he got burnt there, or he didn't make a play on that other play. And even some stunts where he and 37, Brandon Alexander, will swap spots, and BA will go in on the safety blitz, and Kramdy seems to handle that assignment, which is just bonkers to me, the way the Blue Bombers will drop four into coverage, Adam Big Hill or 94, Jackson Jeffcoat into coverage sometimes to just give defenses these crazy looks and go, is Willie Jefferson just covering our primary slot receiver? Yeah, I have to look at the film, but I'm pretty sure he was. And that's just some of the things that these athletes can do on the Blue Bomber defense.
Richie Hall, if you are listening to the podcast, and I know you do, can we get more Jackson Jeffcoat dropping in coverage? Because
yes,
that
please.
Makes Doug Brown say Doug Brown says the phrase zone dog. I'm like, oh my God. I don't know why. I love when Doug says zone dog.
I'm with you, brother. Now there's a third name that's just popped up for me. And so, in consecutive games, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he's had a sack taken away because his arm accidentally hit the quarterback's head. Nothing malicious. Ricky Walker. You know, he already has four sacks, could have six, seven sacks this season. I'm certain he's had two taken away, you know, one on consecutive weeks here. What does Ricky Walker bring to this team?
Well, the one this week, he very clearly face masked Jake Tolagala, right? It was the play number three, and yeah, he gets him across the face, and he went, oh, I honestly was concerned when I saw that. I'm like, oh, is this going to start a fight? Like, because this game was heated on Labor Day Sunday. But Walker just kind of, you know, turns Dolagala's helmet, you know, a quarter turn and tightens it up for him, I guess, a little bit, or whatever that was.
I just didn't see that as malicious. I saw that as
not at all.
With his arm up in the air and following through.
I'm with you exactly.
Okay,
I was just concerned that when you get the quarterback in the face, well, this is what everybody was talking about last week, quarterbacks and heads and stuff like this. That's been such a spot of concern for us, right? From Steven Richardson to Casey Sayles to now Ricky Walker. And in the beginning of the season, it didn't feel like it was going particularly well, right? There didn't feel like a lot of interior pressure was being generated by this defense. But Jackson Jeffcoat gets back, and now everything. Jeffcoat's health this season has been fantastic. But Jake Thomas, doesn't he have 5 sacks? And Ricky Walker is in there taking his reps. And I mean, they're only rotating 6 defensive linemen, 6.5 essentially. But you know, normally 7 or 8 defensive linemen, they're rolling with 6, and plus Damian Jackson. You go, wow, these guys are really doing it. Like, they're not getting a ton of snaps off for all these 4 and 5 man fronts that they run. So that's an even further testament to your point of what Ricky Walker's been able to do, eating up all these snaps and eating up all these quarterbacks. It's been very good to see. I was going to qualify it by saying I wouldn't necessarily count Ricky among the best defensive tackles in the league, but he's doing exactly what his job is for these Bombers. And it's to, you know, generate some pressure and get some sacks and cause some havoc.
Yeah, that's what I expected you to say. I mean, I'm not trying to list off candidates for most outstanding defensive player, but just guys that, you know, once again, the Blue Bombers seem to have this knack for finding the next guy and having the next guy available when things don't necessarily go as planned, whether it be injuries or maybe, you know, the whole idea of Darby not working out the way they want them to. Okay, third name on the defense, and you probably aren't going to be surprised when I mention Evan Holm. This guy, yeah. What a find. And you know how I feel about the Blue Bombers mining Manitoba and making sure that the best Manitoba players don't play anywhere else. Well, this is the next best thing in my mind. It's a guy from Minnesota who played at North Dakota, and he's just, I don't know, he just impresses me more and more every single game. Convince me otherwise.
No, I refuse to. I mean, well, he's not got many interceptions, Greg, but man.
Times as many as he's got. I think he's got 1, and he could have 4 yep. or 5. And, well, as I always say, there's a reason why that guy's a DB and not a receiver, because he's just not very good at catching footballs.
But he's good at tracking receivers, and, man, he moves well. And, you know, wow, why is nobody else on this guy? This is pretty great. He was in a battle for that halfback spot in training camp with Jamal Parker. Eventually, Parker's injury decided it, but Evan Holmes not going anywhere now, right? He's got to be. I don't have the week 14 numbers in front of me. He's got to be top or second in pass knockdowns this season with Willie Jefferson up there super high. And yeah, he just, when you see him, just, you know, it's all very calm with Evan Holmes. It's not like a panic to get back to the football. He moves smooth as an athlete, but think of BC game, and he's going up against 6'5" Justin McInnes. Oh, the ball's up high, run, leap, swat, done. And it's just calm, and it's not high. It doesn't feel like high intensity. It doesn't feel like high energy. It doesn't feel super electric, but you're like, man, this guy is just all over everybody. And then at some point, someone's going to be able to have the conversation. I don't know. It's just incredible to see Evan Holm doing this. And I think you and I have talked about this before, GMAC, to be able to get significant contributions from rookie and minimum salary players is what's required to win the Grey Cup, because you have so many stars eating up so much of the cap that you need star-like performances in certain games and certain seasons from your minimum salary players. And Evan Holm, maybe not star level, but he's outplaying his salary. Let's say that.
I think that's very well said. And a guy that I think is going to be on the pencil tip of a lot of guys who vote for the All-Star teams, because he's just been simply outstanding. And just once again, another one of these guys that goes about his business in a certain way. And there's just not a lot of flash, but when you need him to do a job, you mentioned, you know, leaping up in front of receivers. He's at 5'10", 5'11". I'd like to know what his vertical jump is. I don't have his his numbers here from his combine, but let's be honest. The guy is a heck of an athlete, and that's why I don't like the conversation about who should be back returning punts. And, you know, Jamal Parker, catch the ball, dude. Paul Bennett did it for 37 years in the CFL, and just catch the ball, get me 8-9 yards, run straight ahead. I don't need anything other than that. I don't need you to give up goofy rouges, and I don't need you to fumble the ball. We can deal with everything else. Just go straight ahead. You get as much as you get. And there was a conversation about maybe putting Holm back there. I'm like, no, I don't want him back there, because I want him concentrating on this job, a job that he's doing very, very well.
Yeah, he really is. I'm with you in that in this era of football, I think you need somebody who's contributing less regularly on defense back holding down your returns. Gosh, Sask, who did they use in returns? Alford, who has a tiny role on offense, and Bertrand Hudon, who had a small role on offense. Everybody goes to full-time returner and part-time contributor somewhere else. So yeah, no, I'm with you 100% on that. When it comes to All-Star time, it's going to be interesting because Dietrich Nichols, though he doesn't appear, I guess he's tied for third in knockdowns in the CFL. Dietrich Nichols is a slam dunk All-Star in the West. You then have Evan Holm has to compete with guys like TJ Lee in BC, and that's going to be, I wonder. And then you get to compete with voters who might think, wow, he's too young, can't give it to him over a veteran. But there's not a lot of competition, I would think, at halfback in the West. So Evan Holm's gonna get some love, I think, for sure. It might be tough to overcome veterans, and please nobody miss out the fact that Dietrich Nichols is the best halfback in the CFL, even though he's only got one interception.
That's a good thing, folks. That's because quarterbacks don't like to throw at him. And I know we sort of harp on that, but that's plain and simply the case. And Nichols, when he has to tackle a guy, doesn't miss an open field tackle.
No, he absolutely does not. And you'd be surprised. There are at least two occasions where I was doing in the pregame show, we do a hell of a play, right? And it's just a play from the previous game. And I go to the guy and he talks about, you know, what he saw, smelt, felt, whatever it was that led to that play. And there are a couple times where guys have said, well, I mean, that happened because Dietrich did this. Like, really? You're really DeMario Houston, your amazing interception against Calgary wouldn't have happened without Dietrich Nichols cutting a guy off. Oh, interesting. Oh, cutting a guy off. Oh, interesting. Oh, okay. Well, I have no ability to see that myself as a football fan, but I'm going to take your word for it because you know the game 15 times better than I do. So there's a lot of times where it's just very quiet with Dietrich, right? And just you just as a person covering the team, you just hope that everybody else in the league kind of understands. Oh yeah, by the way, Dietrich Nichols is one of the straws. There's a lot of straws in a defense, and Dietrich Nichols is one of them.
Okay, we have to ask you about a straw that hasn't been stirring the proverbial special teams drink, and that's Jenerian Grant. The gentleman had the Blue Bombers won the Grey Cup last November in Saskatchewan. Might have been the outstanding player in the game, DT?
Yeah, that was the right time and the right play. And who else would it have been? At this moment, without going back to the stat page for it, I'm going to say, yeah, like that was
that's a reasonable assertion on my part.
I think it's good.
Well, I think Chad Kelly should have been the outstanding player as well, based on his impact and the amount of plays that he played. But that's a discussion for another day, and hopefully we're not having that discussion in December of 2023 over which Toronto Argonaut should have been the most outstanding player in the 2023 Grey Cup in Hamilton. But Jenerian Grant, how close is he? And once again, Jamal Parker doing a fine job, but he's not a difference maker. He's not a game breaker like Grant. And that, I think, for Blue Bomber fans is maybe the only missing element, the only missing ingredient right now that makes you go, OMG, this team is as good as it's been in the last four seasons.
So on Janarian, we saw him on the sidelines in this game, and he was never moving very freely. He had returned to practice in that week where you're after your fifth game on the six game injury list, you can practice again. He returned to practice to do some running, and it wasn't hard running, but it was more than a jog. He was trying it out, and then we didn't see him again. We didn't see him after week number six, and the Bombers put him back on the six-game injured list. And when you watched him on the sidelines in this game, he never really moved very quickly. He just walked around like when my wife is at the mall. Man, I'm full of the metaphors today or similes today. When my wife's at the mall, I kind of just wander around the outside of the store while she's in Aritzia or whatever store women shop at. I don't really. I'll plead ignorance on that, but I just kind of wander around in a circle and never really doing too much. That's where Janarian was on the sidelines in this one. So this is just a guess on my part, but definitely not this week. And I don't know about the Toronto game, which is now 3 weeks away. By the end of the season, fingers crossed, yes. But I have no information other than I can't imagine it's this week against Hamilton, and Toronto is 3 weeks away. I hope so, but I'm not going to bet any sort of money on it. And, you know, Janarian, I mean, there's the big play potential. We talked about variance, right, with how the Bombers and what I'm concerned about going forward. Return game is all about variance, right? I'm going to get 9 yards or I'm going to get 102 yards in the Grey Cup. And I'm going to get one in the West Final. And I'm going to get the best play of the year in week two against Saskatchewan. That conversation is already over on what's the play of the year in the CFL. It's Janarian really helps, you know, in certain games, he tips the scales. Absolutely. So, and then when he's not tipping the scales, he just does good returning. There aren't a lot of bad or, you know, negative plays. They're neutral or, you know, slight pluses or mega pluses from Janarian. But yeah, I as a Bomber fan, maybe cross your fingers for Toronto, but, you know, be ready to have it push back a little bit.
Okay. But the point is he will be back this year in your estimation.
I would... Again, strictly a guess, but yes.
Yeah, that's strictly all I'm asking guess, for. I'm not going to hold you to anything. I'm not putting a bounty on your fine head of hair or anything like that. So, yeah. So that
my kinesiology non-degree is the my pop kinesiology says yes. He may be back there. He will be back this year.
Okay, good enough for us because you're the person that's around this team as much as anybody. CFL trade deadline. I know this doesn't have the same sort of moniker and hype that the NHL trade deadline programs and conversation has, but I mean, let's be honest, a trade deadline deal absolutely changed the fortunes of this franchise, maybe for another 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows? When the Blue Bombers acquired Zach Collaros in 2019, Doug Brown and I were actually recording a podcast and we were lambasting the Blue Bombers at throwing away what felt like a reasonable opportunity to do something special in the playoffs that year. But without a quarterback, a genuine starting quarterback, that season was going to go down the tubes. We know what happened with about a minute to spare in that trade deadline. All that to ask, DT, is there anything cooking? Like, is there a place, and with the standings the way they are right now, you know, I think most teams have a sense, oh boy, we just need to win 2 or 3 games in a row and we're back in the conversation. If you're Hamilton, if you're Ottawa, if you're Edmonton even, you might be looking at the situation going, yeah, we're not going to get rid of anybody right now. Is there anybody that the Blue Bombers say Janarian Grant can't come back? Is that where they would look to make a move perhaps?
Oh, that's a good question, because who's going to want to give up a returner? Edmonton, Calgary, but I feel like there's guys like Floyd Allen and they probably don't want to give up a guy like Tommy Lee Lewis. Sask not trading with the Bombers. could they get Dominic Rimes from BC? Maybe could they trade for Dominic Rimes and just go all receivers all the time?
Sure.
Ottawa, Hamilton. No, Montreal. Montreal's in the playoffs, and they could host a playoff game. I don't think so. Where do the Bombers actually need help, right? Like, Canadian offensive line depth, rock solid. American offensive line, fine. Quarterback, if you lose Zach, the season's over, and that's the story for so many teams anyway. Receiver, depth is fantastic. There are good receivers that can't even get on the roster.
Hello, so Carlton Agadosi. Where are you, brother?
Exactly. He's at practice working his butt off every day, but just can't get back on, right? Because it's that good. Defensive line, Celestin Haba's on the practice roster. He's got four sacks this season. I think it's four sacks, where one was a narrow miss. Linebacker depth, defensive back, but what defensive back can you trade for that's, one, better than the guy you have, and two, can get it in the last 6 weeks? I mean you're now talking, you'd have to be talking star level defensive backs that are very comfortable, that you would be very comfortable with and have played for you before. So short of DeAndre Alford coming back from the NFL, which isn't happening.
You just read my mind. It's like, is he going to go the D Alford route here? I think he is. So I think the point is, I think the point is this, they're pretty set. But Grant would be the icing on the cake, and I don't think they're going to rush him back. I think he'll be back when he's ready, right?
As long as you get first place, right? Because we've talked before about more than 60% of the teams that go to the Grey Cup since 2000 have been the number one seed, because you get the game at home, and it's only one game and not two, and only one game for weird things to happen. As long as you get that top seed, you know, it kind of doesn't matter who got you there, who's going to be there in the playoffs. And I think, G-Mac, I think you and I are probably both on the side of, if Janarian did not play until the West Final at home in Winnipeg, we would be perfectly comfortable with him performing in that game. Yes?
Yes, sir. 100%.
So anything in advance of that, to me, is just a bonus.
Okay.
So, yeah, fingers crossed. But, yeah, Toronto gives up Jamal Peters, and the Bombers put him at corner. But no, it's just, they're so good. There's just nowhere. Trevor Harris can come be the backup quarterback. I don't even know. It's like, now I'm just saying stuff for the sake of saying stuff.
They're pitting the east side against the west side. It is already deafening at IG Field for the best game of the year. The Banjo Bowl. The Bombers with Sergio Castillo going right to left, kicking off. Saskatchewan with Mario Alford and Thomas Bertrand Houdon. Short kickoff. This one, Charbel DeBeer will have to field it at the 35-yard line. The defensive tackle to the 45, the 50. And Charbel DeBeer, how bad is the return? The coverage team for the Bombers? Defensive tackle takes the ball 20 yards on a return. There's a hole, 25, 20, pushing forward across the 20-yard line. Brady Oliveira slapping his helmet. He is into this one already with another first down. Liam Dobson has no helmet currently, and his long hair flowing in the breeze. I wouldn't be surprised if that is what we're about to hear from Andre Preux.
Major foul, unnecessary roughness. Saskatchewan number 91. From the 20-yard line, we're going to go half the distance and a first down.
Nick Dembski is the lone receiver out to the right-hand side. Prukop under center, pushing left and in for the touchdown. The opening touchdown of the Banjo Bowl from Dakota Prukop. He'll take the hand up here on first down, waiting. Now exploding, 55, 50, 45, tripped up, 40, 35. Brady still running, tackled by Ford from behind. Oliveira down to the 23-yard line. And a huge play. Bombers from the Riders' 17-yard line. Five-man rush. Kolaris has time now. Timer lap. Rafferty flips it to Oliveira. 15, 10, 5. Ducking his head. Oliveira for the touchdown. Typical Zach Kolaris under pressure magic. Oliveira's back in the end zone. And the Riders, or Bombers, pardon me, are back on the board. Schoen motions from right to left, gets the waggle. He'll fake it to a couple guys. Kolarov's on a roll to his right. He's got a man open. It's caught by Lawler at the five, spinning, driving. Kenny Lawler for the touchdown. Oh, are they going to mark him down? He dove into the end zone. They're going to say his knee was down. Lawler diving.
I don't know how he's not across. They're going to have to review that with his entourage.
Review by the command center. The ruling on the field is overturned to a touchdown.
And it's a touchdown. Andre Pruse saying the ruling on the field overturned. Kenny Lawler, a 24-yard touchdown. Winnipeg 20, Saskatchewan 3. Three-man rush. Kolarov pumps, and he wants a deep ball for Schoen. Deontay Williams in coverage. Schoen got it. Spinning backwards to his left, and he's out of bounds at the 16-yard line. The rookie Williams had no idea what to do with that ball in the air. Kolarov looking right. Out route caught on the goal line for the touchdown. Wiped out the official who gets up the signal touchdown for Dalton Schoen. First and 10 from the ride of 32. Vega de Oliveira. Kolarov pops. Going to the end zone for Schoen, who's open on Marshall for the touchdown. Dalton Schoen on Nick Marshall. Touchdown. Pamela Schaefer-Baker. Stearns will go into the backfield for a six-man rush. Dolagala pressure in his face in the flat. Oh. Bang! Reda Crampy. Bang down Jamal Morrow. Just past the 40-yard line. Brayden, if you would mark that for the hit of the game, that was solid, and it's third down, Riders.
If you love defensive.
Four receivers right, Kolarov looking left, one-on-one. Oh, he's open. Lawler's got it at the 30, 20, 10. Lawler wrestled out of bounds. Beat Nick Marshall again. Just picking on Nick Marshall. And with 13 seconds left, the Bombers are at the 8-yard line. 13 seconds left. First and goal from the 8. Kolarov looking left. Who's going to get it? It's Schoen inside the 5. Dalton Schoen again. 41 and 3 touchdowns from Dalton Schoen.
We didn't think there was enough time left for yet another possession to make it into the end zone. But when you're in the zone, when you're firing on all cylinders, everything is just going the way of the Winnipeg Blue Bomber offense.
Cutback 30, 35, 40, 45, Brady 50 into Ryder territory across the 50-yard line. Brady Oliveira, they'll mark him at the 49 after a gain of 33, I believe.
Brady Oliveira's lost his mind out here. He is channeling some of the best running backs I've ever seen in Canadian Football League. This is incredible.
And what a game it was.
I don't know if you call that a ball game.
Well,
is it a landslide?
The score,
a natural disaster?
The score in the second half was only 9-0 Bombers. Final score, 51-6.
I don't care what the cost is. Nick Dembski.
Kolarov for Dembski. The 5 and a touchdown.
Dylan Mitchell's going to get one on Winston Rose.
Going deep for Mitchell on Rose. Got it at the 20, and he's going to walk into the end zone.
You know what I've learned about CFL fantasy football is that it makes me hate players. Kamar Jordan, I don't know anything about him, but I hate him now.
All right, let's talk a little fantasy football, CFL fantasy. Oh, can you imagine the people have gone all in on Aaron Rodgers? The way they were feeling last night? Was it his first snap or third snap? Something snapped, and I'm not trying to be callous or insensitive here, but my goodness, I hadn't even turned on the game yet, and I'm getting this alert on my phone about Aaron Rodgers is out of the game. What are you talking about? Did he walk out on the team? Did something happen with vaccination protocols? Like, what's going on? Oh, my God. Like, he's hurt, and he's probably done for the season.
Confirmed, done for the season. I had the same snap joke in mind because the AP story had after four snaps. I'm like, don't you mean five, including the one of his Achilles? But then I felt super bad about saying that to.
Yeah, we won't say that
to
one
no
aloud.
One in particular.
Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so looking at our fantasy league, I'm in now 365th place. Where are you in our CJOB league, DT?
Well, I moved up this week, man. I had a good week. So I moved up. I am just clicking up 322nd. So, yeah.
I'm on your heels, brother. I'm coming for you. Doug Brown still kind of the cream of the crop in our group or what?
He was 200 spots, more than 200 spots ahead of me this past week. And if I search him up, I feel like he's going to still be doing pretty well. He's having a great year in fantasy.
Yeah, but let's be clear. He's not picking this teams. This is not him. He's got a ringer. He's got
Zach
somebody.
Kolaris isn't picking who plays for the Bombers, but
Fine. Fair. All right. Fair enough.
Who are the Zach Kolaris of fantasy? Doug Brown is.
So I went all in on Zach. He was my captain last week. I went all in on Brady, and the only mistake I made was probably taking, if you can believe that, a mistake would be picking Kenny Lawler in fantasy instead of Dalton Schoen. That three touchdowns versus one would have probably made a little bit of a difference here, but I went heavy on Bombers. I just had a sense that wasn't a heart pick. That was like, yeah, be smart. The Blue Bombers are going to come out all guns a-blazing here. Who was your secret weapon this week?
Well, I had Brady and Kenny, and my secret weapon was DeVaris Daniels. Man, I'm so bad at chasing what happened, last week and the week before. I'm like, yes, I'm going to diversify and go DeVaris Daniels and end up with 8 points, even though they absolutely routed Montreal. I'm at the point where I need to, in these final 7 weeks or whatever, just start mega stacking teams and go, who's got the weak opponent, and just start mega stacking, because I need to. I went Trey Ford. I'm like, I'm going to chase Trey Ford. He'll get at least 100 yards rushing, if nothing else. Wah, wah. Like, just not a fantasy performance of 14.2 points. It was, although I moved up in the standings, but that was mostly Brady and Kenny. And it's just, I'm having a bad year in fantasy. It is a real blow to the ego here.
That's okay. That's what makes it so much fun, is because you make all the prognostications, all the predictions in the world at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of each and every week, and your chances of being absolutely correct are so minimal. There's a reason my dad always put it this way. It's why they call it gambling. Yeah, fair enough. Because there's no sure things in cards. There's no sure things in sport. There are some things that are more sure things than others, but to make any money on the sure things, you've got to parlay several of those sure things, and then that's typically where you get tripped up, right, DT?
Yeah, it sure is, and you have to try. If you're 300 spots behind, you have to try, and if you're tired of taking crap from Doug Brown every week that you totally deserve, you gotta take some risks, and I'm gonna have to take some risks.
So we're stacking up on Blue Bombers this week against Hamilton.
Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, Hamilton, Ottawa, BC is the slate. So BC at home off a bye. There may be a BC Lions stack I start to investigate. Vernon Adams plus, see what the prices on Hollins are. Edmonton, Sask, I probably sprinkle that one, but not stack. Toronto Argos at Montreal. Toronto's laying some beats down on teams lately.
That could be a good game, though. That could be a good game.
There's the potential. But as long as it's high scoring, right? If it's a good game at 45-27, you still got your points for fantasy, right? But will Winnipeg do it twice in a row? I'm so terrified of just picking the wrong team. I'm such a wimp this year. Did I tell you the story of the time I finished 45th in the nation in fantasy? All those years ago? I'm still riding that pathetic high. But yeah, that's... BC at home is probably the play, because Winnipeg's on the road, Toronto's on the road, but Toronto, Montreal, I like that better. Hamilton, I don't know if they hold their own in a shootout with the Bombers, or it ends up being kind of a one-way, guys have the fourth quarter off kind of thing that makes me want to avoid that. So yeah, those are kind of my very first level thoughts looking at the matchups this week. I probably avoid Edmonton, Saskatchewan entirely.
Don't ever apologize for going all in on the 45th overall in the nation. You're talking to a guy who has cheered for the Winnipeg Jets since he was 6 years old. The World Hockey Association Jets, one of the best hockey teams of all time. But in the NHL, the first time around, two series wins in 17 years, and the greatest moment in the history of my first NHL team was a double overtime goal in a series that the team ultimately blew a 3-1 series lead. So don't ever apologize to me about going deep on the things that make you proud, the things that make your heart sing, Derek Taylor.
All right. Noted.
DT, have a great call. Have a great trip to the Hammer. Hopefully it's your first of two visits to Hamilton in the next several weeks. If you know what I'm saying, wink, wink, say no more.
Yeah, don't jinx anything, buddy. Don't jinx anything.
I didn't say anything. I just said say no more, and here you are going on and on. So that's it. Don't forget to download, subscribe, and share the Blue Bomber podcast. And also, in case you didn't already know, Monday nights, Coach's Show with Derek Taylor and Mike O'Shea will be automatically uploaded to the Blue Bomber podcast. So if you want to catch a rerun of that or catch it and listen to it at your leisure, you can do so by subscribing to the Blue Bomber podcast. We will recap this week's game next week and look ahead in the Canadian Football League, focusing on, of course, your Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.